say the title of my talk is Multithreat Deformations of ADS-EFT and Spherical D-Brains. And it's based on a work which I just finished together with Ben Kratz. So the context in which this kind of studies fit is, of course, holographic cosmology. And in particular, we will consider specific cosmological models which have been formulated in the context of the ADS-EFT correspondence. So these kind of models consider consistent truncations of compactifications of spheres of string theory or M theory to a lower dimensional theory with a negative cosmological constant, and therefore are formulated on spacetimes of the form ADS D times. Okay, so we know that the standard ADS-EFT correspondence states that a quantum gravity theory in an asymptotic LEDS spacetime is dual to a conformal field theory, which is defined on the conformal boundary of ADS. And the most well-known example of this correspondence is the duality between type 2B string theory in ADS 5 process 5. And n equal 4 super young Mills with the SU engaged group on the conformal boundary of ADS. And this is actually the example I will consider in this talk. Okay. So these cosmological models that I was talking about before have been first studied in the bulk by Hertog and Horowitz, and later expanded and analyzed also in the CFT dual by Kratz, Hertog, and Turok. So what happens in the bulk is that, so if you consider the ADS cylinder, so ADS in global coordinates, where this is the time direction, it has been shown that given modified boundary conditions on the bulk fields, whereby modified I intend the non-standard supersymmetric boundary conditions that we are used to, there exist supergravity solutions in which initial data can actually evolve into a big crunch singularity in a finite time. The dual description of this kind of bulk setups is a deformation of the dual field theory by some multi-trace potential, which is actually negative and unbounded from below. And I will draw it schematically in this way for a generic field of the boundary theory. So the instabilities that we have in the bulk, and that actually allow ADS to tunnel and then evolve into a big crunch singularity, translate into the field theory in instabilities for this field pi that can actually roll. Well, it will start rolling down the slope of the potential, that is the deformation that is turned on, and it will reach infinity in a finite time. And actually, the time that it takes for this field to reach infinity exactly matches the time at which the big crunch singularity develops in the bulk. So to be more concrete, there are two kinds of setups which have been considered. So the first one is a consistent truncation of type 2B ring theory on ADS5 times S5 that actually, with the appropriate modified boundary conditions, which allow the formation of this Vikram singularity, corresponds to turning on a double trace unstable potential for the scalar field pi scalar fields of n equal 4 superion mils. And well, Krafts, Hertog, and Turok, and actually try to recover unitarity in such a theory by using the method of self-adjoint extensions, so to actually define the evolution of the system also across the singularity. But this model is turned out to be a bit problematic, and well, the computations are actually hard to keep under control. A more promising setting is a consistent truncation of M theory on ADS 4 times S7 mod ZK, in which specific modified boundary condition that produce the instability actually turn on a triple trace deformation of the dual theory, which in this case is APJM theory. So in the paper with Ben, we consider both kind of setups. And but actually in this talk, I will just focus on the first one. And yeah, what I would like to do is to provide a deep brain interpretation of these instabilities that we've seen well, develop in the bulk and have a counterpart in the dual theory. And more specifically, I would like to make precise the mapping that exists between boundary conditions in the bulk and effective potentials on the work volume of deep brains in this kind of background with modified boundary condition. So the claim will be that this instability corresponds to nucleating spherical B3 brains in ADS5 times S5 with modified boundary conditions, so nucleating spherical B brains that are stretched to infinite size in finite time. And yeah, and I will also show that the potential which causes this brain to expand and reach the conformal boundary of ADS in a finite time matches exactly the one that one expects from the ADS-CFT dictionary in the dual theory. So the setup will be the following. Okay. So as I said, we consider a consistent truncation of type 2B supergravity compactified on S5 to a five-dimensional theory which only contains the metric mu nu, with a negative cosmological constant, coupled to a single scalar field phi, which is actually the quadrupole deformation of the S5. And that preserves an SO5 symmetry of the full symmetry group. So the bulk action will contain the Einstein-Hilbert term plus an action for the scalar field phi, which has a potential of the following shape. So we see that when the field phi vanishes, we have a negative cosmological constant, and therefore the local maximum of this potential corresponds to the maximally supersymmetric ADS state. And then if we linearize around this local maximum, we see that the scalar field phi has a mass which saturates the BF bound in five dimensions. And therefore, even if it's tachyonic, ADS5 with the standard boundary condition is still stable. Okay, so I will consider global ADS with these coordinates. So in these coordinates, the conformal boundary of the spacetime is that r going to infinity. So in all asymptotical ADS solution, the scalar field phi behaves at large value of the radius, so well, near the boundary, as alpha mod r mu over r square, beta over r square, where alpha and beta are two functions of the other four coordinates of ADS. And in the following, I will actually set the scale mu at which the logarithm is defined to be 1 over r ADS, which I will take to 1, as you can see from the metric. Okay. Okay, so if we consider standard boundary conditions in the bulk, which mean setting to zero the non-fluctuating modes of phi, that is alpha zero, well, we know that the dual theory in this case is simply n equals 4 Cooperian means. And this theory is formulated on the conformal boundary of ADS, which in this coordinate is the boundary of a cylinder, so it's on S3. And well, since this field theory is on a curved background, the real scalar field of n equals 4 Cooperian means will couple to the curvature of the background, and we'll get a mass term proportional to the curvature of the field. So phi are the scalar fields of n equals 4 Cooperian means. And well, this kind of coupling is actually called conformal coupling. Okay. In the mass range, between in this mass range, actually, both falloffs of the scalar field are normalizable, so we can actually impose more general boundary conditions. And in particular, we will be interested in the following modified boundary conditions. Which sets the two modes to be proportional, and here f is an arbitrary constant. This choice of boundary conditions does not preserve supersymmetry and also breaks the asymptotic symmetries of ADS, that is, it breaks the conformal invariance of the dual theory. And in fact, we will see that actually this constant f is running. Okay. So what has been shown in the bulk by Hertog and Horowitz and then Knaps, Hertog and Turok is that for positive values of f, there exists smooth initial data that evolve. To a big crunch, in finite global time. Okay.
Why does not contradict the inequality?
Yes, it does contradict the unitarity, but the
Okay.
dual field theory is not unitary. I mean, you could try to restore unitarity by defining the vessels through the singularity, which here will mean well, one attempt imposing self-adjoint extension to recover the unitarity of the field theory. But no, of course, if you just look at it like this without some extra input, it's not unitary. Okay. So if you want to, okay. So if we want to implement this kind of boundary conditions from a variational principle, we should add to the bulk action a boundary action such that the variation of the total action vanishes. Well, of course, since here the boundary is r going to infinity, we need to introduce some kind of regulator in the bulk, which will be an infrared regulator in the bulk and therefore a UV cutoff in the dual theory. And we can do it by restricting the range of the radial coordinates from 0 to some value lambda. So for this specific choice of boundary conditions, the boundary term that we have to add to the action is of the form an integral over the regulated boundary. Of a quadratic term in the field phi, which depends on f and on the position of the boundary, plus other term which are f independent, and that are already present in the standard symmetric case. Okay. Okay. Now we want to see how these boundary conditions translate in the formations of the dual field theory. And to do it, we just use the ADS-50 dictionary. So we know that in general, the boundary value of a scalar field pi, so let's call it pi zero, sources an operator O on the boundary, which is dual to the bulk field. So in this particular case, phi naught is actually what I call the alpha. And the coefficient beta of the fluctuating mode of the field gives the VEV of this operator O. This dual operator is a chiral primary operator of conformal dimension 2. And since we know that phi is a quadruple deformation of the S phi, which preserves an S phi symmetry, we can write it as 1 over n. To the six. Okay. But again, in this specific mass range, we can have more than just surface terms on the boundary, and particularly we can have multi-trace deformations. And the proposal to include them is to add to the boundary theory a functional W of the operator O. No, it's that. So if we add this functional W, we should implement in the bulk the boundary conditions given by alpha. So we see that if we want to add the first term, so J O, we should just take alpha V J. Okay. But in this case, we actually have alpha, that is F beta, and therefore W is minus F over 2 integral of O squared. So for a positive F, this is a negative potential, which is unbounded from below, and it's a double trace deformation. Okay. So since O is dimension 2, this is a classically marginal deformation, but it has actually been shown that it's marginally relevant. For positive F, if the beta function is non-vanishing. Therefore, we have seen how the modified boundary conditions in the bulk that we know produce a singularity translate into a double trace potential, which is unbounded from below in the field theory. So if we combine this quartic potential for the field phi with the conformal cutting, we get the potential for O, which has this form. So this metastable minimum is the dual of the ADS state in the bulk. And okay. And so we've seen that so that ADS is unstable with modified boundary conditions, and then it can actually tunnel to a cosmological state space-time where smooth initial data can evolve into a big crunch. The analog in this picture will be starting from this fourth vacuum of the theory, tunneling to the slope of the potential, which will then correspond to the initial data in the bulk, and then evolving, well, letting the system evolve, that is letting this operator diverge in a finite time. And of course, one could ask what happens to this operator when it reaches infinity in a finite time. And that's indeed a very interesting question. But for what I would like to say, actually, I will just interest in the dynamics before. So this is the potential for the operator O, which is this one in terms of the scalar of n equals 4 to the mean. Ah, okay. So there is this quartic potential and the conformal coupling, which I said before, and I thought probably here, which is the mass term with the fields of n equals 4 to Brian Mills gets due to the coupling to the curvature of the background. So you would have the quadratic.
So if I
conformal.
So it's conformal on the sphere. So if I go to magnetic on the sphere is conformal to flat space. So if I just do this conformal transformation and redefine the fields accordingly, then this field will only see the
unbounded potential. Yeah, I mean, indeed, if you look at the system in Poincaré coordinates, actually, that's what I did in the paper. No, there will be just the amount of potential.
And the other question is, what is the relation between that potential and that potential?
That, you mean this one?
That one.
Ah, that one, no, this was just a schematic way to see it. I mean, just to say that modified boundary conditions that produce cosmological singularities turn on some unbounded potential. Yes, okay, in this sense, yes. Yeah. No, sorry, yes.
And there will be many more files coming, actually.
So, can you explain again, what is the quadratic potential? I see quadratic.
Yeah, quadratic, you know, or quartic.
Oh, it's square.
Oh, so this is phi, not all.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, now I turn to the
computation. Yes.
I'm not engaging the internet operator.
No, it's the combination.
Really square root of that.
Okay.
You already has.
There's trace of I squared minus M over 2 O squared. So the full potential is trace pi squared from the conformal coupling minus M over 2 O squared. Mm-hmm. Avoid the single trace.
Mm-hmm. Why do you have this form that phi 1 is singled out?
Because it's the SFI invariant quadruple.
I see.
So you have the S5.
Yeah,
which corresponds to the SO6. So you have the six scalar fields, and you basically make the quadruple out of the six boundary scalar fields. Mm-hmm. This is the combination, which is the variant SFI.
I guess the difference between it's kind of a feeling about the dual to this trace, it's operator of.
Yes.
One of the graph, the potential is a function of O, not the scale of O.
Okay.
Which this doesn't have a local minimum.
Sure, it does. At L equals 0. O minus S squared.
Quadratic equation, which goes like that. Not for the,
oh, it goes like O, in the origin.
It's not the minimum, it's max.
The origin? I mean, it's just like the Higgs model and the standard model.
Quadratic equation, it goes minus infinity, cannot get
sure.
A local minimum.
Sure, that's a boundary. O minus O squared.
O minus O squared, it's linear. The just as Higgs theory in mm-hmm. standard model is phi mega phi minus phi mega phi all squared, right? That is the minimum of phi cosine in the standard model.
Mm-hmm. If it's all squared,
so it's in the standard model, because it's actually
but then you can move that if you can have four where different moves for quadratic equation. Maybe I don't think there's something really big.
Find out, let's take the potential which is in an abelian model.
It's just a chicken's quadratic function. It goes like minus x squared infinity.
Yes.
How can you tell the local minimum?
It's not quadratic.
So it's a minimum at a boundary, because O is
there's a linear.
The minimum of O is at 0.
What is the
x minus x squared.
Yeah.
As a, if the range of x is only positive.
Oh, the answer that is just one.
Yes, and so it's positive. So it has a minimum of 0.
So now we return to the
what I said, to the computation of this effective potential for D3 brain. So I will consider a spherical probe D3 brain in ADS5. Length is 5 with the modified boundary condition alpha equal f beta. So, well, if we depict ADS5 times the disk with the radial coordinates, the F3 coordinates times the F5. So we have that these D3 brains extend in time, drop the S3 and have a radius R in ADS and are localized on the F5. So in perturbation theory, the leading contribution to the effective potential from D brain comes from the disk diagram in string theory, which is simply here evaluating the D3 brain action in this background. So the D3 brain action is the Dirac Bohr infer plus the Wessimino action, which basically go, so the Dirac Bohr infer action goes like minus the tension of the D3 brain times the volume of the Bohr volume plus the charge times the integral of the C4 four form potential. So in this particular background, the volume goes like, you can see it from the metric, it goes like r to the third times the root of 1 plus r squared. And the C4, the integral of the C4 goes like r to the fourth. Okay, so we see that for large spherical brains, the leading contribution to the potential cancel because of the BPS condition, and that the subleading term which remains, and that is clearly F independent, because this kind of this diagram is independent but not sensitive to the boundary condition. Okay, that, so the subleading term which remains, it's a quadratic term in the subleading term which remains is a quadratic attractive potential, and R is the position of the brain, and actually I should have written R everywhere here. And so this attractive potential will actually make D-brains with standard boundary condition, spherical D-brains, shrink in ADS. This is this potential that we find here is actually exactly the conformal coupling which we have on the boundary theory, so the quadratic term pi. And well, to see it, you should consider R as a radial combination of the eigenvalues of the fields pi. Okay. So the first contribution that we will actually sensitive to the boundary condition is the cylinder diagram. Which here corresponds to the D3 brain. Emitting a virtual scalar field pi, which fills the boundary conditions at infinity, and then is reabsorbed by the D3. So the two ingredients that we will need for this kind of computation are the coupling J of phi, so out of the D3 brain sources this virtual particle, and the propagator G for the scalar field phi. So we should notice that actually, in principle, a D3 brain could emit and reabsorb all kinds of fields. But to this order in perturbation theory, and considering that only the field phi is the one which has modified boundary condition, that is, only the field phi is the responsible for the supersymmetry breaking, this is actually the only diagram that we should consider. And this actually also justifies the choice of working in a consistent truncation setup. So to read the sources, we can consider the consistent truncation ansatz. Which allows to given a five-dimensional solution in terms of the five-dimensional metric and scalar field, to lift it to a 10-dimensional solution in terms of the 10-dimensional metric and self-dual phi form. If we linearize the D3 brain action around this background, we can read the sources J for the scalar field phi from the action. Well, that I won't write them explicitly, but the structure is they will have some function of R, the position, the radius of the spherical brain, times a function of the angular coordinates on the S5, which has the following form. And that's, well, this form will actually be clear in a moment. Well, the propagator can be computed from the five-dimensional equations of motion, and it will be constructed as the product of a solution which is regular in the interior and one which is which satisfies the boundary condition. So the only place in which this modified boundary condition will enter in the computation is through this propagator. The result that we get for the effective potential is the following. That for positive F is a quartic negative potential for the radial position of these spherical brains. And if we want to make contact with the double trace deformation of n equal 4 superior mills, we can define Cartesian coordinates on the transverse direction. For example, phi 1 is r phi, phi 2 is r. Omega 1, etc. And with this substitution, the potential becomes minus F over n squared. And here I'm actually also restoring the n dependence of the result times pi 1 squared minus 1/5. So we see that indeed it matches the double trace deformation for this operator O if we identify these fields phi as the eigenvalues of the fields capital phi. So we have seen that for positive F, we have a quartic potential that pulls spherical D3 brains to the boundary of ADS, and well, and it does it in a finite time. Okay, so there is one comment that I should do about this kind of computation that we did. So this diagram is that actually, I mean, this kind of computation strongly relies on the fact that these boundary conditions that we imposed were linear. And this allowed us to actually reabsorb all the F dependence of the situation into the propagator. But if we want to generalize this kind of computation to more general boundary conditions, for instance, the one that they consider in the ABJM deformation, we should consider a different, well, slightly different diagram. In which we treat the boundary quadratic term that we see we have to add to the bulk actions of a well-defined variational principle. So we treat it as an interaction which is localized on the regulated boundary of ADS. So the diagram in this case will be that the D brain emits a virtual scalar field phi, which interacts on the boundary through the coupling F star phi square, and then reabsorb it. And in this case, the propagator that we use in the bulk is actually the one for the standard boundary condition. So the OLF dependence in this case in the, is in the boundary interaction. So if we repeat the computation in this case, yeah, I'm sorry. What we find is that the effective potential is the following. So F plus 1 plus 1 F log lambda. Well, times 1 over n squared by 1 squared minus 1 6 by I squared. So the only difference between these two kinds of diagrams is that F actually got replaced by this combination, which is formally vanishing when we take the boundary, the regulated boundary, to infinity. But what we didn't take into account is that actually the scalar field phi can interact with the boundary an arbitrary number of times before being reabsorbed. And if we actually resum all this kind of contribution, we will convert this expression into F. And this is actually what we do with the computation that I showed you before with the modified propagator, which actually, since the boundary term is quadratic in phi, we can actually include it in the propagator already and resum implicitly all these kind of graphs. So the field theory, so from the field theory point of view, the difference between these two kind of computation is in the fact that the coupling is defined at different scales. So if you remember, in the very beginning, I told you that I would have chosen the scale mu at which to define the logarithm, which appears in phi to be 1 over RADS. And in this way, I've implicitly fixed my renormalization scale in the boundary theory to be 1 over RADS. And the coupling F over 1 plus F log lambda is nothing but the coupling computed at the scale mu tilde equal to lambda, which is the scale given by the regulated boundary in the bulk. Okay, so, another comment. So from the large N field theory perspective, so the passage from F, this F, that's the scale lambda, so this F will actually correspond to the resummation of all the planar diagrams which renormalize F. Okay. Another comment is that this running indeed agrees with what was computed before from both in the bulk and from the field theory. Okay. So in the end, we have found them. If we consider for 1 second the steepest direction of the potential, which is phi 1, we find an effective potential which has a quadratic term due to the conformal coupling minus a negative quartic term, which is F dependent. And these two terms will compete. So the situation that we can imagine for these spherical D-brains is that ADS5 with modified boundary condition can nucleate spherical D3. So if this brain that nucleates have a small radius, they will just fill the conformal coupling and they will shrink again to the origin. But if they, by some non-perturbative effects, they are able to nucleate to a radius which is large enough to fill the quartic potential, they will start to expand in ADS5. Okay, well, one comment is that a brain with a large enough radius will correspond in this kind of situation on in the bulk on the initial data, which allow to produce a Dicran singularity, and in the CFT on being on the slope of the potential. So the spherical brains will nucleate, they will expand, and they will reach the conformal boundary of ADS in a finite time. But since a D3 brains in ADS is a domain wall, for each brain that nucleates and reaches infinity, the interior of the spacetime will have one unit of flux less. And therefore, the flux increases. And therefore, the spacetime, the ADS spacetime in the interior will become more and more curved as this process continues in action in a continuous way. And although we know that our supergravity approximation will actually break down when the radius of curvature of the spacetime will be of the order of the string length, we can still infer that the final stage of this process will be the formation, the brick trans singularity in the bulk. Okay. So that was more or less the picture in terms of spherical D-brains. Then, of course, the interesting question that one could ask is what happens to these brains when they reach infinity in a finite time? What?
It's going to be coupling limits.
No, it's just placing brains in ADS5.
They can go all the way to the boundary.
But the boundary of ADS, not the boundary of space before the.
If such a process was possible before, then there is a problem with the coupling limits, it would not be just ADS. Something must come and save the day before the brain reaches boundary, otherwise it's inconsistent.
Well, maybe then that might be the explanation of why one finds the crunch singularities in ADS.
But your main point is that some value description of the physics near the singularity, or
the singularity
doesn't make
sense. But the H theory is sick to begin with.
Again?
The H theory is sick to begin with because it has this potential.
So how can you infer information about the singularity?
So that you do have a system that, if you look at it from a gravity point of view, in ADS, look like it will crunch. So the crunch is explained by this
material. What is the consistent quantum fluid description?
The bulk is not relevant to the consistent quantum description. Why are you trying to describe the bulk?
The whole point, putting this in ADS is it's very physically dual, therefore, some understanding of what happens in the singularity.
Yes, so now you've mapped the problem of the singularity to a quantum
field. Already when one brain reached boundary before the couple,
they all reach at the same time.
Let's talk about one.
They all hit at the same time. One is all.
But the moment that you allow one.
Yeah. They all hit at once. That's the thing about. Yeah, you can't expect the bulk and the boundary description to be perfectly valid at the singularity. That's precisely what you want to resolve. Bulk description will break down.
Let's talk about
the boundary.
Or the duality.
No, there's no duality in singularity. You want a dual to a. You want to describe a dual to cosmological singularity, and the way you describe it is by going to another description, which is valid, hopefully, at that point.
Which is
the description of a quantum field around this point where the Higgs field hits infinity.
But there must be.
You can't expect both descriptions to be valid at that point.
No, I think the assumption the quantum field theory is a valid description of that. I think it breaks down. The correct description involves not just this quantum field theory, it cannot. Mm-hmm. The moment you allow this brain to go all the way to the boundary, like, it also be fucking minimal.
Maybe you're asking if the singularity is resolved or smoothed out in some way.
No, but I think it's like that. It's more than kind of save the day in order for something like that to be consistent. But just that is not.
But I think the point of view here is let's assume that there is something like ADS-CFT. Mm-hmm. And that it's possible to extend it to these non-trivial boundary conditions. Now, I understand that the...
Clearly, it's like that, right? Clearly, you look at the coupling. In order to allow the brain to go...
I take it as a starting point. So I don't know about the coupling limits. That was the argument to motivate the SFT. I'm just taking it as a starting point. But then the question is...
I map the problem to a quantum field theory. Okay? And then I forget about the problem.
But
purely within the quantum field theory.
But we don't have anything that we derive from something else because string theory doesn't tell you what happens to this kind of a priori. So the rules are not given a priori.
Yeah.
So the way to come up with some rules would be assume that we know that ABS-CFT works in more conventional settings with normal boundary conditions. Let's assume that we can apply the usual rules of adding a lot of trace deformation if we change the boundary condition, and let's see what happens. So we see in the field theory that we get these unbounded potentials, you run very finite times,
so you see
and either you say this is sick and you stop.
You see sickness in both, and you see sickness in both sides.
If you can resolve the sickness on one side,
which
that
sickness
is enough.
Do you resolve?
The scalar field hitting infinity. In the dual tip.
On the result, I think.
Yeah. There are ways you can attempt to resolve.
Okay.
So that's the whole game.
Is
to say
that. Should we have a seminar about
this? No, I don't think so. That seminar is over. I'll tell you about it. But the whole game is to say, let's go into a regime where the bulk description fails. Gravity is singular. That's it. We don't know how to resolve it.
But in the framework of ADS-CFT, so forget about gravity, string theory and ADS is broader. This kind of breaks down.
No, our point is that if one of the two dual descriptions were valid through the singularity, that would be good enough. Because you follow it through the singularity in that one that holds, and then you map back to the other one. So you don't have to have both descriptions valid all the time.
But the exercise would be to formulate all of that before taking the coupling limit, see what happens, what goes wrong, and then get on that. But, okay, thank you.
What, explain what you mean by decoupling limits.
Well, there's an argument to get ADS-CFT from the D-brack. Yeah, so that's a good point, and we thought about it, but it's not completely clear to me how to implement this double trace. Deformations even starting from asymptotically trapped space. If you have ideas in that direction, that would be extremely interesting.
In fact, I think you're seeing that because as the brains go out, the part which is unbroken each group, if you want, is smaller and smaller.
Yes.
And in the Maratina argument, in order to have a smooth geometry, you have to have lots of brains on top of each other.
And it's true that we don't have a smooth geometry.
The curvature is rolling up in the crank inside is the crank.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the gauge curve is very broken for
brains. Yes.
That's what's
happening. So it's also morally consistent. If the gauge curve is broken.
but I fully agree that if already this time evolution will not be defined at the moment of the first brain, it's infinity. The question you're asking is there a way that we can define the time evolution in the field to be beyond this seemingly
and if we manage by putting something that will prevent from going all the way to infinity, then you always take time.
Well, but then you make a black hole of the punch singularity, and that's completely different. So you can restrict to those things if you're not interested in the cosmological singularities. That's fine.
If you want to answer interesting questions, you have to go to dangerous places.
Like that parameter. So, other questions? So, if not, let's thank Alice for a very interesting talk.
Thank you.